Kyle, look who's back, man. It's you. It's Kyle.
Hey, it's good to be here. We're back at it again.
Dude, I missed your face, man. We always had a fun time doing these pods, and
it has been a while.
Yeah.
It's good to be back. And I think we've got a topic today that's ripe for some great discussion. So I'm just excited to be here.
A hard hitting one. Thanks for hitting me up, man.
Absolutely.
We're going old school too, because you've been around, you know, we used to do pods back in the day, and I'm gonna meet up with Chris and Adam soon, and we're gonna do.
Very cool. Yeah, it's so weird to hear about it being back in the day, because it's still fresh in my memory, but it has been a few years, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's online years, you know? Normal human year is like 7 years online.
Exactly.
It's like Miller's Planet, you know? It's like time dilation. Too close to the bullshit.
So, exactly. Getting sucked in.
Uh-oh, you froze there for a sec, but I...
okay.
Yeah. No, you're back.
Okay, perfect.
All right. So a lot of things happening in your life, dude.
Yes. A lot has been happening.
You're having a kid.
Yes.
You're not having the kid, but you all are.
I have contributed my part into making this child happen. So yeah, very exciting stuff.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you so much. You know, I think this is one of those things where I've been looking forward to it for a long time. And I think it intersects a lot with the other topic we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah.
And, you know, just thinking about the significant milestones and emotional experiences you can have in life. So it's all really exciting stuff.
Because when you contacted me and you're like, yo, I got a story to tell. Do you want to hear it? And I said, of course.
Yes.
But we're going to talk about how you met your birth parents, right?
Yes.
In Korea.
I did.
For the first time ever?
For the first time ever.
Wow. Okay. I want to hear this. But when you told me that,
yeah,
I immediately thought about how you're actually having a kid. And I thought how well that dovetails together. Like that.
Exactly.
That seems like a big two major moves that seem to be deeply connected, I think.
Absolutely. You know, I think more than anything, it speaks to what it means to be a member of a family and having those familial links with other people.
Right.
And as an adoptee, I think it's the first time that I'll be experiencing both of those at the biological, very visceral human experience level. So
just for people who because it's been a while since we potted and heard, you know, you tell stories from your life and stuff.
Yeah.
But you were lucky in the sense that your adoptive family was a great family. Like you're close to them and you had, you know, a good upbringing. It wasn't like a bad personal situation insofar as that goes, right?
Yes. So as you're saying that, I'm nodding right now. And, you know, I'll preface what I say with that I think there is a lot of larger societal pressure for adoptees to always say that they are lucky, and they are lucky because they experienced being adopted in the West and they were saved from bad class or family circumstances back in the Orient, sort of thing.
Right.
And I'm thankful, but in a much different manner. You know, I think we'll cover a little bit about some of the problematic areas of international adoption in general. But I am thankful. And I had a good experience in spite of the systemic problems in international adoption.
Yeah, that's a big distinction. I think I meant it that way because I've heard bad stories.
Yeah,
but I feel like everyone that I know who has actually come out and talk about it as a general topic, seem to be people who actually had relatively good experience insofar as it goes,
mm-hmm.
and maybe that gives you all. You know, more, I don't know, confidence, more, maybe even more objectivity about the whole thing. I don't know.
I think so.
Maybe even credibility, sadly, but I don't, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. I guess the way that I would articulate it is, You know, the adoption experience at large is really defined by trauma in terms of being displaced from one's biological family. And it just so happens that because my immediate family circumstances, like my adoptive parents, I was raised as an only child, were very supportive and very good to me. And they were always supportive of my interest in seeking out my ancestry, that helped to, I guess, give me some latitude or some mental freedom to be able to explore these questions and really look at these things as objectively as one can, while also being in the midst of experiencing them as well. So
when did you decide that you wanted to, was this something you always figured you want to do, and you were like, this is the year I'm going to do it because we're gonna have this kid? Or is that what happened? Or
actually, this also leads into some just big news circumstantially in the Korean adoption world, which is they've recently moved to end private adoptions in South Korea. So any adoptions that were previously done by private agencies before, that's no longer happening. They haven't fully banned international adoption yet, which is what I'm hoping they'll do. And they seem to slowly possibly be on the trajectory to doing so. But at the very least, they have stopped private placements of children. So the federal government has full regulation over it. There's more accountability with it, and it's all more centralized as a result. And one of the moves that was sort of part of this overall trajectory was they were moving all adoptee records from private agencies to a centralized federal government agency called the NCRC, which is the National Center for the Rights of Children, I believe it is. There were concerns by some adoptee activists that as a part of centralizing and moving all of these documents, which was to happen within this month, I believe it happened, they were sounding the alarms for the last 18 months of, hey, this documentation transfer is going to occur. You may want to place your search request with your adoption agency before these documents are moved and when things are in flux. So that's when I submitted my request. It's something I've always been interested in. My parents, when I was a kid, were very supportive in me doing that. They always framed my adoption as having two sets of parents that loved me. And I think for a lot of white liberals that tend to adopt, they use that as a platitude to make their kids feel better, but they don't necessarily believe that. But fortunately, I feel like my parents truly believed that, and they were supportive the entire time I've been wanting to do this. And this was really the time for me to officially put that request in. I had previously made contact with my birth family before through an adoption agency search, but there was less information on file at the time. And after I made initial contact, we were in contact for a couple of years with my birth father, but then the email disconnected during a period of time where I got busy. So that was 8 years ago that happened. So I was kind of like, ah, shit, I don't want to have to go through that process again and potentially deal with not being able to find them. But it was really that documentation push that happened that was being talked about within the last year that made me say, okay, I think this is my chance to really do as much as I can to make this happen.
They were just worried that as the paperwork's being moved from physically moved, that it might get lost or damaged.
Yes, or they didn't know exactly what the archival efforts would be, or how long it would take to get them online, or what the process or staffing situation would be like to be able to do these searches.
So is there like a legal obligation or right that you have to get that information, or are you just sort of like hoping and praying that they'll comply?
It's that right now. I believe they've written some legal guidelines for that to be part of what an adopted child has the rights to, but whether or not that's actually enforced or there's any accountability behind it is still to be seen.
Okay. All right. So you decide that you're going to finally do this.
Yes.
That's a pretty big step to actually go, meaning like you're going to go all the way. You're going to go to Korea. You're going to try and get in-person meeting.
Yes.
With your, wow.
Yes.
I mean, when you told, I was thinking about this last night as I was in bed, just kind of, I like to try and put myself into the shoes of someone who is their experience sometimes. And I was thinking like, It's pretty mind blowing, dude.
Yeah.
Like for anybody, like the idea that you would, the first time you see the closest, like basically the ingredient of what made you.
Yeah.
Basically, right? You're looking.
Absolutely.
You're in a way. By the way, just curious, how old yes. are your biological parents?
I'd have to double check the dates, but they're in their 60s. Okay. So I believe between 63 for my mom and then I believe 65 or 66 for my dad.
Okay. All right. So older, but not like old, like, they're like the young, they're like younger old people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Wow. All right. Wow. So the first time you see, and you met both of them.
Yes.
Are they still together? Are they like a married couple?
They are no longer a married couple. I guess they've been split for about 15 years now.
Okay.
But I was able to see both sides, paternal and maternal,
at different times.
Biological family. Yep. Yep.
Okay. Wow. And I know there's a lot of steps from here, from where we are now to your actual meeting.
Yeah.
But I'm just curious, like, well, maybe we'll save it for when that actually happens. But all right. So let's hold off on the what was it like, but let's tell me about the, you know, get like just a trip. Like what, like how does this whole thing go down? How does something like this actually go down?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah.
Let's see here. So in terms of the contact that I made with my biological family before we actually took the trip, I got their KakaoTalk contact details and sent out initial contact messages with both my mom and my dad, whose information was on file with the adoption agency. Actually, I'll backtrack a little bit and talk about what the process was for actually getting their contact information, in the sense that I submitted my request to the adoption agency through a series of a couple forms, and I didn't know what to expect, in the sense that I was expecting it would take 6 months to a year to get some sort of response, maybe a 3 month wait time to be like, okay, we received your documents and now we're going to initiate the search. But it actually went down in the best possible way, in the sense that they were like, hey, we're not going to do a search. That's how they began the email. And I was like, uh-oh, did something happen? But then a few lines down, they were like, hey, guess what? We have your mom and your dad's contact information in our database. We don't need to even do a search. We're just going to give you the contact information right away. And they gave me that response within 1 week.
What kind of contact information was it? Was it like
it was email addresses and phone numbers?
Okay. And they knew it was up to date?
Yeah, they knew it was up to date, because what they did before they contacted me was they contacted the phone numbers that they had on file to make sure they were still connected to the people that were in those records. Did all that confirmation and they got back to me within 1 week.
Okay.
So,
by the way, I think this is all, the details are good, because maybe some, you know, this pod could serve as like a basic, sure. Not a guide, but like help. If anyone out there is thinking about doing this, like, you know,
I wanted to share it.
Yeah.
Cause I'm going to sidetrack a little bit for a sec and say that when I was thinking about all the different places where I wanted to just share, I guess the rawest sort of account of my experiences while I'm sort of reflecting and sort of synthesizing everything and figuring out what I want to do with this experience and tell my story, this is the place I wanted to do it. I wasn't going to do it in your typical like Asian American shit lib podcast. I was going to do it in a place where I felt like I could share exactly what my experiences and perspective are without having to filter myself in any way.
Oh, it's flattering, man. Adam, who is also a transnational adoptee,
shout out to him,
and who remains a close friend of mine, and we'll be on the pod soon. I've always told him, in a way, like when he describes some of like his life experiences as an Asian American adoptee, transnational adoptee. I've always said, you know, in a weird way, it's like an extreme version of the sort of like Asian diaspora sort of life experience, in a way. the way in which there is a sort of discontinuity in the familial line.
Yes.
Okay. Adoption is in some way, okay, you can push back on this if you want.
Sure.
But to me, it always felt like that it was an extreme version of the discontinuity felt through the other kind of discontinuity, which is more like a kink in the line, mm-hmm. but of immigration.
Yep. I agree with that.
It's much more extreme.
Yeah.
But I think there's lessons for diaspora generally to learn. Maybe not lessons, but even things to ponder.
Just things to reflect on.
Just things
to see the parallels in the situation and see how they apply to their own personal situations. And I'm sure there's at least one thing we'll be talking about today that will resonate in some way.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I don't mean to compare this in terms of magnitude, right?
Sure.
But, you know, like I've had a couple experiences where I've heard that a uncle or aunt of mine is terminally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to go visit them in Taiwan. I never met these people before.
Yep.
Okay. Or maybe I have, but only when I was little.
Sure.
I'm not as close with my dad's side as I am my mother's side.
Sure.
And so about 6 years ago, I went to go visit my dad's brother, his next closest, he's the oldest, but his next second oldest brother. I never really met this man before. And it's like this alternate version of my own father, who's at the same time a stranger, but also deeply familiar in a weird way, just almost instinctually familiar.
Yep.
And the reason he's a stranger is because I'm an immigrant.
Yeah.
And I just thought that this is like a very toned down, extremely toned down version in some way. I don't mean to ride the coattails of your experience here, but I'm just trying to relate.
No, I know what you mean.
Know what I mean?
Absolutely.
But this experience of yours is much more intense. Sorry. So go on. I don't mean to interrupt.
You know, I think you're speaking to, in terms of like that disconnect or discontinuity, it's very interesting to me because I've always felt like things about me or who I am, I've kind of felt this sense of dissociation. Like I would look in the mirror when I was younger before I fully accepted that I was this Asian person. But I just felt like this discrete being that came out of nowhere. You know, the qualities that I have or the way that I look, my physical features, since I didn't have a relationship with my biological family, it just felt like it came out of nowhere. And to be able to meet my family, I finally got to see sort of where I fit into a continuity in terms of the physical traits, in terms of little personality quirks and qualities. And it did make me feel a lot more grounded and a lot more like I'm connected to something much larger than myself, which was an amazingly profound feeling. And yeah, that's definitely something that I wanted to share or touch on today.
Yeah. So you've got it set up. You've got their contact information.
Yep.
And then what did you do? Did you email them or?
Yeah. So, what I did first was I tried adding my mom on KakaoTalk, but her privacy settings were set too high. So I had to send an SMS message being like, "Hello, mom, if I can call you that. This is your son. It's been a long time. I hope we're able to establish a relationship and keep in contact with each other." And I had used AI because I got a recommendation from a friend that AI is actually better at translating things in a way that sounds natural than some of the translation apps like PapaGo or Google Translate. And I found that to be the case. So that's going to be one of the recommendations I come out with in this podcast, is if you want to have a natural sounding conversation with people that you don't share a common language with, use AI for right now rather than those translation apps. Because
what did you do? ChatGPT.
ChatGPT. Like yep. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so because it was so good at translating what I wanted to say, my mom immediately tried to call me on the phone, and I couldn't pick up because I couldn't really say anything beyond like, "Hello," and "This is such and such." I had to stop the call from ringing and say, hey, I'm sorry, but my Korean is not very good yet. So we're going to have to continue communicating through message, but change your privacy settings on KakaoTalk and we can continue this.
Right.
But I guess she works
By the way, I just want to say, like, this is why I'm not an AI doomer. People hate AI, and I actually kind of love it, because it can be so helpful in these kind of situations.
This is exactly the sort of use case that it's good for.
Yeah, like this your experience should be an open AI advertisement.
Yeah, that's what you should be selling it on, not like replacing people's ability to think basic thoughts or formulate sentences in their native language. This is like real shit that it can actually be helpful for.
It's a fucking tool.
Yeah.
And, you know, an axe can be used to kill someone or it can be used to build something, right?
Exactly.
So, anyway, yeah, no, that's great. I'm just thinking about how nice it is to have a technology that can help you really connect in a communication with your mother, despite the language barrier. In a prior time, you know, even before AI, I think it would have been much more stilted.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I think so.
She was just all over it. She was like, excited.
She was like, damn, okay, let's get this started.
And she never heard from you before? Like, I know you said there was a time before when you had started initiating the search, but that never resulted in a communication?
Yeah, I had only made contact with my birth father, and at that time, they had split up by then. a little bit frustratingly, like, he never even mentioned that I had contacted her, and she found out through the adoption agency that I had even made contact at all. So I was a little bit irritated, but, you know, still have my own separate relationship with him, and it's good. But yeah, it was a separate discovery on her part that I had made contact.
Dude, that first, like, were you nervous? Like, how did you feel sending that text? Because I just feel like that's such a huge step into the breach, man. It's so massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, before I answer that,
yeah,
I'm not seeing any like waveforms.
Oh, you're fine.
I'm good. Yep. Okay, cool. Just want to make sure, because this is good stuff we're capturing here.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's see. It's cold, Jerry. Yeah. Yeah. So stepping into the breach. I mean, because I'm just imagining the little send button.
Yeah.
With your Korean text pulled from ChatGPT.
Yeah.
You got your heart and soul poured into this, and then you're like, wait, shit, is she gonna respond? Is she gonna get this? Like, how's this gonna go down? And then you hit send. Like,
I come from an interesting family situation when it comes to my adoption, in the sense that I'm not coming from a single parent, unmarried mother situation where there might be some shame or some new family members involved type thing where they need to keep me a secret. So I didn't want to assume too much, and I didn't want to have my expectations set too high, but having known that I came from that situation, I don't think I had nearly as many fears or reservations as a typical adoptee would. And it just so happens that, like, you know, I've been thinking about this stuff for so long. I've dealt with a lot of existential anguish as a result of my experiences, that when it comes to formulating language around this stuff or talking about it with other people, or even in the case of this, where I'm trying to initiate contact with someone for the first time and it's a very intimate message, I think just all of my experiences up to this point cumulatively have put me in a position where I'm just very good and very comfortable with expressing these sorts of thoughts. So to be honest, you know, I think possibly in contrast to a plurality of other adoptees, like, I think I just kind of went with my gut, and it took all of about 10 minutes to formulate the message, and I just hit send. I was like, fuck it, let's go.
Nice.
And yeah, I got a positive response as a result. But my mom has a busy work schedule. She's working like 6 days a week, 11 hours a day type thing, like real Korean work hours.
Wow.
So she wasn't able to immediately respond to my message. She was just like, yes, it's so good to hear from you. I look forward to talking to you more, and I hope that we can meet soon. And then like a day later, I got a message from my younger sister, who is 11 years younger and who I had never made contact with before.
Did you know she existed?
I did know that she existed based on the initial contact I had with my dad. But yeah, it was just crazy to know that I had a sibling that was 11 years younger than me that came along so long after I was adopted.
Same parents. But I mean, it's not a half sister, it's a full sister.
Yep,
but,
correct.
And wait, so when did you know you had a sister?
I found out in 2011 when I first made contact with my birth father. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. I never knew about that. Wow. So I knew that she was there. And then I was finally, for the first time ever, able to interact with her via KakaoTalk.
And did she know about you? Like, she knew about you from...
So that's something I found out a bit later. She, when we were in Korea, I was like, so how long have you known about me? And she was like, I just found out about you right when I sent the message, right after you made contact with our mom.
Oh,
so she had no idea.
God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy.
Wow. Yeah. They never told her.
Yeah. They never told her.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Was she excited?
Yeah.
That's incredibly exciting, dude. I mean, if someone told me like, hey, you have a little brother we never told you about, he doesn't live in America, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
I got to see this person immediately.
It was really cool because,
wow.
I mean, I didn't know at the time when she was initiating contact that she hadn't known about me, but there was this palpable feeling of she was excited to make contact and excited to get to know me. There was this eagerness or this nebulous, indescribable draw, I guess you could say, we had to each other.
Mm.
And it's the first time I've felt that, where I've never met someone. I just happen to know we're related. And that in itself alone was compelling enough of a draw for me to want to really get to know someone, like send messages every day, just have conversations about the mundane, like, hey, what are you doing right now? The two questions that she would ask me like every day for about 2 or 3 months were, what are you doing right now? And what time is it right now? I mean, she could have easily checked that, but I thought it was nice that, you know, she was making conversation out of something she could have easily checked.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. It's just an excuse to say hi, you know?
No, exactly, exactly.
That's funny, man.
Does she
speak English at all, or?
She doesn't speak any English except for the two phrases that she would say to me when I was there in Korea, and she would say it to my wife, too. She'd either say yes, 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 when we understood what she was trying to say, or no, 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 when we weren't exactly understanding what she was trying to convey.
Wow.
So those are basically the only things that she knows in English.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we were doing everything via entering text into our phones and showing each other. And then we would have to scan it for about, you know, 10 to 30 seconds.
So you knew about her. You just never were able to contact her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. And so
she was like, hey, I'm your sister and I'm 26 years old now. Hello. And I was like, oh, man, I guess we got a lot to catch up on, huh?
Unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah.
And to have like a sibling, a full sibling, like both parents.
Yes.
In another country.
Yes.
That you didn't know existed.
Yes.
So it's literally like jumping into an alternate timeline.
It is. It really is. And an alternate timeline where I had stronger links to the people in that timeline than in the timeline I actually lived.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
From like that deep, visceral, biological, like, you know, animals taking care of their babies type bond you have. So, yeah.
Yeah. What about on your what about your dad? In terms of making contact.
Yeah, so it's funny because my mom, pretty responsive. Like if I send a message, it'll take her within 24 hours to respond. My sister, she sends a response within like 5 to 10 minutes, maybe a couple hours. And then my dad, I came to realize over the course of about a month or so that he's just like a fucking old guy that like is not comfortable using mobile phones with applications and using technology and typing with his thumbs on a touchscreen.
Yeah.
So he would take a long time sometimes. And I could tell based on like the sentimental or like loving tone of his messages that it wasn't a matter of how he felt. It was more just a matter of like, it's actually difficult for him to use the phone. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, right.
Because, okay. I mean, you know, I was born in 1989. And, you know, over the course of the last 35 years or so, Korea has developed an unimaginable magnitude in a way that I think was really reinforced when I had conversations with my parents about my relinquishment and just how much time had passed between the time I was born and the time we were able to make contact. Like, so much has happened economically and infrastructurally in Korea that is really unreal to believe unless you were there to experience it and you really reflect on it deeply.
Yeah, was that part of their decision to have given you up, was economics?
That's a great question. So I think more than economic, it was circumstantial in the sense that I was born with a congenital birth defect to my kidney, and it needed to be removed. I was pretty sick when I was born, and my parents were under the impression that, one, I would require lifelong care, and two, that the ability to operate safely was not available in Korea at the time. Which, you know, recently I've come to maybe have a bit of skepticism about. I know that I've talked about it with some other people that are more intimately familiar with Korea's development and are there on the ground right now that said it probably wasn't possible to do an operation like that very safely without high risk of complications. But I think my parents were also given the impression that it simply was not possible. And because of what they were told and because of the economic situation with adoption and that sort of being the first line of defense when it came to child welfare at the time, I think it may, I mean, I don't know this for certain, but my intuition and suspicion is that they may have been pressured a little bit more than they should have to relinquish me because there weren't any economic factors that would have put them into a difficult position with my condition. It seems like they were told that the operation simply wasn't available, regardless of money or whatever. And as a result, that's how I was relinquished.
Oh, okay. Interesting. So there's a little bit of a question mark over this in terms of maybe the ethical conduct of the adopting agency or something or what?
Yeah. Or what would usually happen at the time is there was adoption agency staff in hospitals, like ready to like talk with parents, consult with them. And hey, if things didn't seem 100% perfect, they were ready to pounce and get that paperwork signed.
Cause there was money involved in this.
There was money involved. Correct. From private agencies, they had a huge stake in basically making profits from these relinquished children. And as a result, the staff members of adoption agencies that would be at like hospitals or they would be staffing orphanages where people would hopefully temporarily relinquish their children. And then when they came back to pick them up later, they found that they were gone. There was a huge economic motive at the time between the 60s and the 80s. Where this was just very, very common.
And if these are ethically compromised for-profit operations, you know, I mean, maybe that answers why it seems like there's so many cases where it doesn't seem like the adoptive parents are particularly well screened.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know? I mean, I think it sounds like they're children from abroad that have been adopted into some pretty bad situations here. And
absolutely. And
agencies
I'll say
are
straight
probably
up,
not incentivized to give a shit.
Yeah. I mean, the number one reason why I believe what I believe about international adoption is not because of my own experience, because my own experience was good enough where I feel like that wouldn't make me in opposition to it.
If it was just based on what you knew personally, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So what really radicalized me against how international adoption is conducted and how it came about in Korea is the direct result of hearing the stories of other adoptees that did not have good experiences, that were in very abusive situations. They were rehomed to different families under legally shady circumstances, exposed to some really depraved or really terrible things. And hearing that And knowing that my experience could not be duplicated and scaled to where that was a consistent experience has what led me to question the institution of international adoption, particularly Korean context.
That's what I think people don't quite understand about guys like you and Adam is like, you guys are not coming from the perspective of we've been victimized and we want our restitution. You're coming from the perspective of like, I'm a relatively lucky person in this world. I have the ability to speak up because I wasn't victimized in that way. But there are people who have been brutally victimized, abused, and they don't have quite the same ability to stand up and speak against the system the way that, say, like you or an Adam is able to. Because
absolutely. Because I remember you mentioned, maybe about 15 minutes back, that my experience may lend me a certain credibility. And I think that's true, especially in a Western context where if you have some sort of moving experience, you're not allowed to be anguished and like sobbing about it because it makes it seem like there's something about your ability to be objective that makes you not credible. And I guess knowing that my experience was relatively good in the grand scheme of things, you know, despite some of the traumas or difficulties that I've experienced, I know that my ability to talk about these things without breaking down sobbing lends to a credibility of being like, hey, you know, I may have had a good experience, but I know plenty of others that have not. And as a result, I want to be able to share some of that and lend them credibility where if they are completely authentic with their feelings and the way they feel, you know, justifiably so, I can share it with a little bit more of a neutral tone to lend it some credibility in spaces where these people wouldn't be believed or they would be seen as overly dramatic or exaggerating. So, yeah.
And there's apparently, maybe we'll talk about this later, but it does seem, and I want to just, note it here though, so I don't forget, but like if I understand correctly, there has been also a great deal of interest in this era of, because there was sort of like a period in time when there was a lot more adoptions happening.
Absolutely.
That there is sort of like a growing awareness of that history and questioning of that history in Korea itself.
Yes, absolutely.
And I know there's been lawsuits and stuff, I think by maybe like a Dutch group of Korean adoptees.
Yep.
And
there was a reconciliation committee that did exactly that.
They want some fucking answers.
A group of Dutch adoptees. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know the specifics. I read about it. It's a story with a lot of history.
Absolutely.
And, but they were not holding back. I mean, they were like, we want some fucking answers.
Yeah.
And it seems like people in Korea were sympathetic to and interested in this question, or at least the courts were.
Yeah, and, no, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's been an institutional reckoning since Korea liberalized. They were no longer under a military dictatorship. And as a result, I wouldn't say there's exactly been appropriate accountability for all this stuff, but there's been at least the beginning of a reckoning where they're recognizing the truth of what happened over the last, you know, 6-7 decades of international adoption. And they're starting to really discuss it. And there's starting to be a greater awareness of it that takes it with some level of seriousness beyond just dramatic portrayals in TV shows. So,
yeah, there's, because they always put a halo around the fucking thing. Like, you know what I mean? Where it's like, everyone involved here is either a perfect victim or a perfect savior.
Yep.
And let's, you know, this is like, you know this better than anyone. But yeah, so, okay. So let's go back to just like the actual events. So you're actually booked and ready to go.
Yeah. Booked and ready to go. Let's see. So arrived in Korea, and I arranged for my family, in particular, my mom and my sister, to pick me up at the airport. And that was crazy.
Did your wife go with you?
Yes, wife went with me. And by the way, it's great to have an Asian partner who is culturally competent in a situation like this, because I can only imagine how much more difficult it would have been to have like some partner that doesn't know much about like East Asia and then have them be like a picky eater or something. That would have made things extra complicated and messy. But thankfully, you know, both of us, we've had some requisite experience with being in East Asia. And, you know, it really made me feel like all the decisions that I've made up to this point have put me on a trajectory to make this as natural of a reunion as possible. Yeah. I mean, there was obviously a language barrier, but the cultural barriers could have been so much higher. And, you know, I feel like little investments that I made in becoming more familiar with Korea or Korean customs or the little things that I learned at friends' houses growing up with Korean parents and eating at their dinner tables sort of thing, all those little things cumulatively added up to really feeling like I felt at home. I was familiar enough with these things. There was a group of people there that I knew I was related to, and they were welcoming me as a member of their family. And yeah, it all prepared me to just have as natural of an integration into this family as possible. And as a result, I do feel like that all those little things I didn't get rewarded for as they were happening, I got rewarded for all in this particular single experience.
Yeah.
Meeting family.
Yeah. 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 Yep.
But I met my mom and my sister and then an aunt who actually had a car big enough to get our luggage into the trunk at the airport. And it went faster than I pictured in my mind, in the sense that like we said our hellos, good to meet yous. I cried a little bit. I thought I was going to absolutely lose it and just be sobbing. We'd be like embracing each other for a half an hour, but no, we needed to get to the car and then head to the hotel and drop off our stuff. And then we planned on going to dinner. So, that first dinner was actually really, really great, because one thing I always wanted to do that I always dreamed about when I was a kid was I was taught by like some friends' older brothers about the receiving and pouring soju with two hands. And I got to do that with my mom at dinner. And that was like one of the fucking coolest experiences I ever had. I drank so much during that trip because that was one of the things that people would default to when I met new family members, was like, hey, you want a drink? And I was like, hell yeah, I don't really drink these days, but I'll drink on special occasions. And I don't think things get much more special than this. So I drank a lot.
Absolutely.
It was very good.
Yeah. What was her, what was your mother's overall, what was your read on her sort of emotional reaction to all this? Was she just, was it like sort of maybe overwhelming her a little bit? Was she, or you know what I mean? Like, what were you reading?
That's a great question, because I think of stories that I've seen of birth parents reuniting with their adopted children has been that of like being extremely emotionally overwhelmed and like wanting to like hug or embrace or just like hold hands or something, just engage in as much physical contact as possible. That was actually not the case with my mom. I think she maintained a certain amount of poise. I think part of that might just be she didn't want to see, I get this sense, she never expressed it to me, but I get this sense that she didn't want to smother me or overwhelm me because she had never met me and didn't know exactly what I would be comfortable with. So actually I'll say that my wife was a huge help with this stuff, in the sense that she recommended things that I could do to express love or express care to my mom that I wouldn't have thought of myself. So she would recommend things like, I think it'd be a good idea if you held your mom's hand right now. So then I would do it. And then like we'd hold hands, and it was a nice little experience, but I realize in retrospect how much it mattered to her, because then like, you know, a day later I would see that it was like a photo of it was the background of her phone.
Like, wow.
She's the type of person where like, you know, I give her a nice gift, and like, for example, like I got her flowers one day, and you know, she's like, oh, thank you so much, these are great. So, you know, it was a nice thankful reaction, but it wasn't like super excited or anything. but I did see that she took pictures of it and put it in the background of her KakaoTalk profile, and then it had some text on there that said, I received my first bouquet of flowers, and I was just so moved by that shit. And I know that, like, her doing that was a symbol of her being moved, but she wasn't the type to express it quite in that way in words in the situation itself. She had some of that, I guess what you'd call, like, East Asian poise sort of thing. So the reactions were never really that intense. I would only realize in retrospect upon analyzing some things further that things really meant as much to her as they meant to me, and vice versa.
I think that's interesting in that the reality of it is more layered than how we might depict it in a film, right? Because we want that emotional payoff.
Exactly.
And what, did your mom cry? Did she break down in tears? You know, like, but the reality is that, you know, it takes time for people to process stuff, right? And the process, just taking it all in, like, you're not, sometimes big things, like, I find this true in my life. It doesn't hit you like a ton of brick. It's like a tsunami. It's not like a huge wall of water all at once. But it is like everything, it's a big shift, but it takes maybe some time or something, you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it sort of like takes a while, then it resonates, and then it sort of gets louder and it gets closer as time goes on, sort of thing.
Yeah, because I mean, like, you know, people talk, if you talk about the trauma of the separation of the parents from the child, it's two ways in a way, right? Don't you think?
Yeah.
Like, it was probably traumatic for your mother too, to be told, like,
absolutely,
you have to make this choice between this child potentially dying or having to, like, legally and forever giving this child up, just, you know, to another country you've never been to.
Yeah.
And just pray and hope that their technology can keep them alive. I mean,
yeah,
the fact that she was presented with that is itself traumatic.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
especially right now in my life, since I'm expecting a child, like, it was very much at the forefront of my mind. Making a decision like that is not something that people take lightly. And there were little moments when I was both with my mom and with my dad where we would do something that was emotionally meaningful. Like, there was a time when I went to a department store with my mom, and, you know, she ended up buying all these baby clothes and stuff. And I was like, you know, you don't need to buy all this stuff. There's so much stuff. I feel just like you don't need to do all this. And, you know, she had a moment where she was like, well, I'm doing this because I didn't have the opportunity to do it with you. And there was this tone of, I think, almost being apologetic. And I didn't feel like she needed to be. But I felt it. And I really felt for her because, you know, she was engaging in probably the biggest act of faith you can have that doesn't involve like some sort of religious act. It was having faith in the material reality of things and hoping that they would work out. And, you know, thankfully they did. So
is she excited about the grandkid? Like, she, I mean,
super excited,
too, you know,
like, super excited. Yeah. I mean, especially since, you know, on Twitter right now, it seems like the East Asian birth rate seems to be a hot topic in discourse. I'm actually going to be the first person in the family that within my immediate family that is having a child out of the three kids. So, yeah, it was a really exciting thing for her.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's another reason just to stay in touch, I guess, right? Like,
yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you could bring, I mean, either bring her here or, I guess traveling with a really young newborn is kind of difficult, but
yeah.
Have you thought about bringing her to the States or something? Or
yeah, it's something that we would love to do. Yeah. It's more a matter of her being able to get the time off. Actually, you know, shout out to her. Shout out to my mom in particular, who like somehow convinced her work to take about 2 weeks off to be able to spend basically every day with us. So here's something that's funny about Korea that I never really grappled with until this particular trip, which is, you know, I was used to taking trains and stuff, and I wasn't really used to measuring things in terms of miles or even really in terms of time, more just like, okay, how many stops do I need to go until I get off the train? But I was really only about 6 kilometers, about 3.5 miles away from where my mom and my sister are. But because of traffic and because of the low ass speed limits, it would take about half an hour to travel those 6 kilometers. So it was more painful of a drive than I initially suspected it would be. But
Taking taxis and Ubers type thing, like car service, or you're.
No, she was actually driving out to our hotel and she was walking around town with us every day. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, driving each way and walking around with us all day for like 10 days straight, like, I'm sure that took a lot out of her.
Well, but, you spent 2 full weeks with her. She took all that time off of work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And your sister too.
So my sister was working at the beginning, but I guess she didn't like the way the job was going, and she was like, hey, guess what, I got all this time now. So about 4 days in, she was like, hey, guess what, I can spend every day with you guys now. And I was like, hell yeah. I mean, you know, sorry about the job thing, but hey, I'm glad we can spend time with you.
She was like, yeah, take your pieces of flair and get the fuck out of here.
No, exactly. Exactly.
Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah.
How, what was hanging out with her like?
Shoot. It, really interesting. Really interesting. You know, actually, we share a lot of personality traits in the sense that.
Yeah,
like,
I was going to ask, like, was there a recognition of like, yeah, we're made of the same material here, clearly?
Yeah. No, definitely. Yeah. I think the number one thing is like, we like doing our thing at our own pace and loafing around. We both like that. So right. Like, I remember in Kakao Talk every day, like I would be like, hey, how's work going? And she's like, I want to go home and I want to go to sleep. And that would be her response every time I would ask about work. Yeah. But when we were hanging out together, you know, I noticed things about myself and about her that that has had a tendency to like mildly irritate my wife. Like, perfect example of this is either having a big menu at a restaurant where there's a lot of good options and me taking like 20 minutes to decide on what I want. My sister was the exact same way. And I was getting a little irritated. And then my wife was like, okay, so now you know what it's like to be me in this situation.
Yeah.
And another thing was, I'm really bad with directions. I need to be looking at a Google map and I need to be like, you know, turning 90 degrees to see where the arrow is pointing, so I know I'm going in the right direction before I start turning onto streets. And my sister and my mom were both really bad at that too. So, those two things in particular, like things that are clearly like quirks that I just thought were like personal flaws, like I realized they had a certain continuity where I was like, okay, well, this is where it comes from. That makes me feel better. So it was just cool to see things.
Does she make up random noises and trademark them like you?
I think that's just a me thing, unfortunately, because I was hoping that something that strange would come from somewhere, but I think I'm the only one that has the compulsion to do that. I don't know if it's from trauma or what, but it's only me that does that.
Yeah.
One thing I did notice among all of my immediate family members was that they're not huge conversationalists. They're more like sit and observe type people. And I think if I don't have any sort of external pressures acting on me, I think that's the same way I am naturally as well. And it made me realize that I think a lot of qualities about myself that I have when I'm conducting myself in English in the West or in the United States, where like, I feel like some of my personality qualities have come from the duress of being in a place where I felt like I didn't belong. In particular, like, I think if I'm left to my own devices, I don't really have any particular strong opinions or anything. I just like chilling. But I realize that I have a lot of opinions on things, especially as it relates to American life or the things that I see wrong with American society or American government governance or politics or whatever. I have really strong opinions about that because it comes from things that have either like hurt me or really bothered me or annoyed me. So I kind of reflected on whenever I would ask my sister her opinions on things, she'd be like, I don't know. Or she'd be like, I don't really care about that stuff. And mm-hmm. I think that's what I naturally would have been like if I wouldn't have dealt with all these things like for the entirety of my life in the United States, just being irritated or felt like I was being extra scrutinized or perceived in a way I didn't want to be perceived. So it was really interesting to see how.
Well, that raises a very, I think, fascinating question, right? Yeah. Which is like, is there real regret here? Or do you think in a way that, you know, you kind of, because now you're older.
Yeah.
You're fully baked. You're going to be a father. You've got your life is together. I know your health is improving. Like everything's clicking. You're in a good spot.
Yes.
Right. So all that shit, in a way, is not only behind you, but it's also you kind of have that to thank for making you who you are today.
Yes.
Right. So is it the question I have, and this is more of a this is more of like an accentuated point for you, but I think there's a general question that I have about this relative to myself when it comes to the much lighter topic of just immigration.
Sure.
Which is, would I have preferred to not have immigrated, or would you have preferred actually to not have been separated and then everything would have been quote all right? Or now being who you are, knowing what you know, all that stuff, do you feel like in a way like I'm glad that things took its course the way it did and I am who I am, you know what I mean?
That's a very, very good question. And
should you answer it on the bonus pod? Should we cut it here and then we'll continue with the bonus pod as the
if you think that'll be a good trod to getting people to listen to the bonus?
Well, it's 56 minutes, so I usually cut about an hour, and I thought, okay, if we jump into this, we're gonna jump into it. So
yeah,
let's jump into it in the bonus pod.
Hey, that sounds good to me.
All right, so we'll continue this in the second part of this podcast. For access to bonus pods, go to patreon.com/plentymag. All right, see you.
Peace.